Okay, so in our previous meeting, we discussed in detail, just to remind you, cases where it's impossible for anyone to determine the proportions in a tarovis iser beheter. Remember we said it's eifshar lamod alav, right? It's not accessible to anyone to know. To just be distinguished from das shotim, right? Or where you just don't know. Where you're the lack's in you. The lack is in the situation. That's what creates the suffix. So the remainder of Siman Tzadiches deals principally with this topic and very important applications. And it's one that we'll see, b'siyata d'shmaya, we're going to encounter it again in Tarovas and again in Basar B'cholov. In Perek Gita Nusha and Tzadi Zion Amud Beis, the Gemara presents the case of kechal, the cow's udder, that's filled with milk. So we will, of course, have occasion to deal specifically with kechal in the halachas of Basar B'cholov, but for now, it's indicative of a general klal in Iser B'heter whose place is here in the first siman of the foundational principles. We just started, by the way. Okay. So toward the bottom of the Amud, on Tzadi Zion, Amud Beis. Amar Rav Nachman, Gid B'shishim V'ein Gid Min Haminyan. In other words, it's not 60 times the volume of the Gita Nusha and the Tarovis, but 60 times the volume of the Gid HaNusha in the Heter alone. Right? In other words, you don't take the full mixture and say, is that 60 times the Gid, including the Gid, but Gid ain't no mina minyan, right? Ain't Gid mina minyan. You need 60 times the Gid itself in the Heter. Okay, the Gid isn't mitzaref to the 60. Kechal b'shishim, however, and kechal min haminyan. Now, the udder is different than the Gid, because they're two different entities with the udder. There's the meat of the udder, right, or the membrane, right, and the milk.
In midiraita, the Ganesha is an Isser. The kakal is only a problem with the rabbanon.
That's right. Okay, so that's
the. Say it like that. Say
or it could be a problem with midiraita, because we're talking about where it was cooked with its milk still in.
Yeah, it's cooked. It's shchuta. It's chal shchuta.
Yeah. So we're going to see whether or not that counts as the midiraita. All this we haven't gotten to yet.
I'm going to jump ahead. I'm sorry.
You know too much, right? We haven't gotten to that yet. Okay. But correct. So for the moment, we'll just. Won't distinguish between Iser D'Rabbanan and Iser D'Oraisa, so we remain technically correct. It's the combination of the meat and the udder and the milk that, if cooked together, could potentially create an Iser of some variety. Now, an udder can be, as the Shulchan Aruch discusses in Basar B'Cholov, emptied of its milk. And if it's totally emptied, then all we have is the meat of the udder. And it's utterly mutter. Sorry.
We never have kechal, right? Nowadays, basically, the minhag is to never.
Right. Lemaisa, they distribute it elsewhere. But the Gemara has a interesting section. If you ever want to, you have a taiva for certain. You have a taiva for certain isurim. What to do? To get a taste of it. And what is that? What's the one? Kachla, kachal, right? For Basar B'cholov. Okay, so now, if it's not empty, then we'd need to have 60 times the volume of the milk in the contents of the pot to cancel out the milk. The meat of the udder counts in the 60, and you can see then the difference between the gid and the kachal, right? Because the kachal itself is not Iser. It's a very simple calculation. We assume, and here's where the principle comes in, that the volume of the milk is at most the volume of the udder. Namely, the kechal at the max is totally filled with milk. The udder itself, the basar, then equals the volume of the milk. So we require then only 59 more times the milk in the contents of the rest of the pot to effect bitul, because the udder equals one unit, and then 59 times more in the rest of the contents of the pot adds up to 60 times the milk. The milk can't be more than the volume of the udder itself.
So for the, yes. Unless you consider the tam that the milk gives off to be greater than its volume, in theory.
Okay, that's an interesting swara, but we haven't encountered that yet. We have now.
Okay.
We have not encountered that.
But even so, that even with time being just ushered, volume-wise, it wouldn't make a difference, because if you still have the taste in there, no matter what the measurement is, you're still ushered. But
right.
here you're running on mushrooms.
So let's go back to the lesson we used before and give a better answer, right? To better answer, and that's that shishim is a marker or an indicator as to whether or not there's a sinas tam. So we say that when you have shishim, the Torah taught us, where did it teach us this? It taught us in Zerua B'Sheila, that 60 cancels out the tam, and that halachically there's no tam. If, in fact, we had something that really was, you know, very sharp tasting,
right,
we
like
still perceive it,
then it'd
be something
right.
else.
Harif, right.
Yes. But since 60 cancels it out, we know that there is no tam. Remember, Tipas Chalav, Hareza Ben Sinistam, right? Mesetam. Okay. So you see why it's 59 plus the udder equals 60 times the milk. Because the amount of milk can't be more than the volume of the udder. Okay,
just to clarify, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Just a bit confused. But we said before that you would need, in the case, you would need, it's not a sire, so you need 60 more. Here, that case, it's a similar case, because you have the milk and then you have the udder. You have two separate things. It's not like it's one.
Right, so it's conceptually the same, it's just that the din is in fact different, and that's what I'm pointing out, right? It's still 60 times what the agent that could potentially effect Isur. It's just that here there are two entities, and that's why it's different, and that's why Rav Nachman felt he had to spell out Gi versus Kichal. Okay? Next is Beitza v'shishim ve'ein Beitza mina minya. So if the egg of an Of Tameh is mixed among the eggs of an Of Tahor, the egg is like the ghee, it doesn't count. We need a full shishim for bitul. That's pretty self-explanatory and not our Indian here. Okay? Now. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Berei Derav Misharshia. U'gechal atzmo asur. The udder itself, if it was cooked with its milk, even though there was enough in the pot together with the meat of the udder to nullify the effects of the milk, to effect bitul, the udder always remains prohibited. And this has its own place in Shulchan Aruch later on. And he continues, said, therefore, v'ina falik teira cheres oser. So consequently, if the udder fell into another pot, it's like a piece of nevela, and could be potentially prohibited. In fact, the Gemara is going to say below that the rabbis considered it shavua kechaticha de nevela. And that's because the udder has gumos in it, and you can never really get out all the milk out of an udder. Take my word for it. Amar Ravashi. Ki havinan bei Rav Kahana. Ravashi reports a discussion that occurred in the Beit Midrash of Rav Kahana. By the way, Ravashi cited all over Shas with the same language. This is that there are lots of Amoraim named Rav Kahana. Ravashi's in the fifth generation of a Babylonian Amoraim, so this is the Rav Kahana who was in the fourth generation. This is his Rebbe. Okay? And when you say ki havinan, when we were in it, like havayos da baye varava, when we discussed this, when we got into the inyan, bay Rav Kahana, in the base midrash of Rav Kahana, right, he also says chazena le Rav Kahana. He also says in some places, I saw Rav Kahana do it this way, reporting his Rebbe's practices. So from those kinds of expressions, we can conclude that he was his Rebbe. There are quite a few, right, other Amoraim, but we identify this as the one generation previous to him. So the question was asked, and whoever this particular Rav Kahana was in his base midrash, and here's the question. Ibayelon, we asked, ki misharinan, when we calculate the shishin, b'dide misharinan, o b'maydin nefak mine misharinan, do we count the volume of the udder itself, or whatever it was polate, whatever it exuded? There's a good dictionary word. They decided that the answer was pretty straightforward. Pshita, dibidide misharina. Simple. One measures against the entire udder. De'i b'mad nefak mine. Here's where our principle comes in. De'i b'mad nefak mine. Minayadidan. How would you know how much it actually exuded? One measures against the entire udder because it's impossible to know how much was niflat into the pot. Now this svara applies in many cases, and it's the reason that kal appears here in the first sima. Whenever we have iser balua, whenever we have something prohibited that was absorbed into heter, we always assume that the entire isur was exuded into a tarovis, since it's impossible to measure the process of plata. That's the principle that the halakha extracts from that sugya. Now, how far does this apply? And this is our major discussion for this morning. And because the end of the siman is a little bit confusing, I'm going to order it for you.
Just clarify.
Please.
So
yeah.
If we're going to assume that anytime I have a piece, let's say of nevela, busim chal, whatever it might be, we're always going to assume pragmatically, another dictionary word, but we're always going to assume pragmatically that not only the piece of meat have to be bottled, but the equal volume of tam coming off the piece.
Now, may I correct that question?
Yeah, please, yeah.
And rephrase it? Because I don't think you want to use nevela basar b'chalav. Hanan of basar b'chalav. Because that's the heftz di surah.
Let's have a piece of nevela. Let's say 1 ounce of nevela.
No,
meat.
A piece of kosher meat that absorbed nevela gravy would be better.
Okay, fine. And now that falls into, because you want to say, no, you want to avoid hanan issues? Is that why you're saying that?
What's that?
You want to avoid hanan issues?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, fine, because that's kind of what I was going with this. But I was just basically saying, if we assume that we need the volume as well as the actual piece itself to be buckled, meaning the 1 ounce of the isur as well as 1 ounce of the volume we assume is coming off of it, right?
Yeah, I didn't say that. But we didn't say that.
I thought we were saying we're assuming that.
No, we didn't say that. We said that's by kechal. That's by kechal not being eno mina minyan, right? Whether it is mina minyan. Here it is. Kechal is mina minyan. Right?
Yeah.
So we're going to say, you know, but that's not what we're saying here. We're saying that we're taking the svara, de lo yad inan kama nefak mine, and deriving a major chiddush from that. That svara as to why you need bedide misharinan and not bemaide nefak mine applies whenever you have Yisr balua.
Right.
So for instance.
So we assume that the amount coming off of the piece will be equal to the volume of the piece itself.
Right.
We always maximize the piece because we can't pragmatically know how much is coming out.
I have a fleshik spoon that absorbed who knows how much over the last 24 hours. I'll clarify why the 24 hours later.
Okay?
If I got a fleshik spoon that absorbed a lot, I put it into a vichyssoise that I'm cooking. right? That's milpik, right? Isn't it?
No idea what that is.
Potato soup.
Okay. It says, but it's milpik. Could be milpik.
Juicy.
Right. So, where's Julia Child when we need her?
So we assume the full volume of the spoon itself.
Yes.
Came off.
Because we don't know. We could say, oh, no, I think I just stuck it in there for a second. Only a little bit came out.
So if the spoon weighs 5 ounces, you need 560 times 5 ounces.
Or I don't know if it's the weight, is it the mishkan or the volume?
However you're mishari,
the volume, right.
Because
generally it's the volume and we figure out by how much it displaces, right? Okay. So if I were to drop the spoon into the pot, I would look how much it displaces. That pays no attention, of course, to density or whatever, but now we're getting way past my scientific capabilities. Now, yes?
You wouldn't use the inside of the spoon. There's a volume, like, if it's a tablespoon. So, wouldn't you consider the volume of a table, the volume of a tablespoon to be that measurement?
Okay, so let's now consider a few pieces of this that we're going to get to. But let's realize that in a spoon, we have two parts. Okay, and for want of good English vocabulary, we'll use the halachic terminology. We have the part that's the kaf. Why is it called a kaf? Because kaf is a palm, right? So it's called a kaf, and that's why the letter is called a kaf. Remember originally the Phoenician alphabet were pictograms. A dalit, it's not a dalit, by the way, with a D at the end. It's a dalit, because it's the door to the tent, right? You know, it's got the slit. Why is yud called a yud? It's the hand. Why is the gimel called the gimel? Because it resembles Abdul Gamal Natzer, the late. No, you can figure it out on your own. Why is a bet called a bet? Because it's a bite. Right? A little drawing of a house, okay? So they all have their little, you know, derivations. Okay? Now, why did I get onto that? I lost my train of thought. So the kaf, correct. So the kaf, we call that kaf part of the spoon the base hakibul. It's the part that, where the stuff is miskabel, where it's collected. Okay? We call the stem the yad or the yadis, right? The handle. Modern Hebrew, you call the handle a yadit, okay? Or a crank. Okay? So we have the spoon with its stem and its base hakibul. So a couple possibilities are, is it just, let's say the base hakibul and a little bit of the stem goes into the pot. Is that all I count? Just up to there? Or do I apply the svara of one of the Balei HaTosfos by the name of Rabbeinu Peretz, that if it's made out of metal and it conducts heat, cham mitzaso cham kulo. So we got to clarify that. So we're going to clarify all these, see how all these things work together. How about if it's a new spoon? These are the issues that appear in the end of our, and they're very, very important, even though they're sort of tacked on, but they're very important for Psak Halacha, right? And to be a Morei Hara. So, how about if it's a new spoon that had only been used in the last, just used it for the first time? Then I know exactly what I used it for. Hey, I dipped it in to stir my coffee, and I know exactly what it absorbed. Or I put half a teaspoon worth of milchic cough drop medicine that I drank, and then I stuck it into a flaschik pie. So, oh, I know exactly what was in it. Then I don't have to do the full.
It's cold anyways, but yeah.
So we have all these things, right? We've got all these principles, okay? Now, when we said one measures against the entire kechal, because it's impossible to know how much came out. This is an interesting svara. It could apply in many cases. Whenever we have something that is absorbed ether, we can always assume that the entire Isur that was absorbed was exuded into a Taroba, since it's impossible to measure the process of Plato. Okay? And so in Se'if Dalit here, the Beis Yosef in our Siman cites the Deya of the Rashba, that even with an Isur Durabana, and that's why I'm not distinguishing, we must calculate 60 times the entire item that was balua, that had Isur balua in it, for we don't know how much it was polluted. That's the chiddush, the strict chiddush of our Gemara.
But you don't want to apply this to Basur Kol itself right now.
No.
So just keep it clarified. This is only with Shari Surim.
Well, if the Isur is Basur Bekalov, and it's I can't say it the way you want to say it, because if I had a spoon that had Basur Bekalov in it, then Basur Bekalov is the Isur, and it would operate the same way. I don't want to say that if I had meat that absorbed milk, that it's the shear of milk that I'm worried about. So take that piece of meat that absorbed milk, consider it nevela, and then have it go into a second pot. Then the principles are all the same.
Okay, hold on, Moshe, I'm probably here, okay? So basically, what we're applying...
You're with me, right?
Not totally. I want to see, with the qualification we're giving, we're not applying this to actual Basur Bekalov.
No, I am. I could apply it to Basur Bekalov, it's just that it's a second Taroba.
It's just that it's a second. I mean, the first Taroba is the meat itself. With the
yeah,
milk.
Right. And then that became Isur, and then, you know, I mixed some milk into gravy. On a
so you want to do that as one tarubis, then when that follows something else, we're going to use the second tarubis.
I mixed some milk. I made a gravy that has milk in it. Now that whole volume of that is all Isur. It's all nevela gravy. Now, some of that got absorbed in a spoon, so I treat it the same.
Okay, fine.
That's my point.
Okay, fine. Okay? No problem.
That's why I don't want to say, you know, doesn't Isur, not Basurubal, right? In one way, yes, Basurubal. Okay? So everybody has the Chiddush of our Gemara. That it's not talking dafka about kichal. Let's talk about anything that absorbs Isur. Now, the Rashba in Torah Sabayis cites the opinion of the Ravid, who reads our Gemara not as a general rule, but the dafka. Namely, applying only to kichal and other things that are specifically analogous to kichal. In his read, the Gemara applies only to things that, like the udder, remain themselves isura and can't be kosher. Remember we said the kechal remains, and it itself is isur. Right? And he can't, even if it fell in the pot and there was 60, the kechal, and you took it out, the kechal remains usur. Another example, this would be Kli Cheres. I got a spoon made out of Kli Cheres, which can never be koshered. In this case, you have to break it and you have to refire it. Refire the thing in an oven, in a kiln. In this case, you would say that we do not know how much was exuded and figure the proportions by the entire volume. Now, that would lead to a major kula. According to the Ravid, when we have a metal utensil, or but for that matter wood, we can estimate how much Isur it actually absorbed and use that as Pleitasa Isur for the calculation of Shishin. The Rashba, if we don't have the Ravid, we'd say otherwise. We'd say, no, you got to go by the whole thing.
Right.
Okay. So why do we mention this? The Bedek Abayis, the additional comments that are penned by the Beis Yosef. So years after the Beis Yosef came out, he wrote the Bedek Abayis. He added some stuff in. Years after the initial appearance, so he had a chance to see other sparring, to think about it, work at Shita better. He usually doesn't disagree with himself, just a few cases. He usually just clarifies it from sources. He notes that this is the opinion of the Baal HaTrumos, as well. And by the way, the name Baal HaTrumos is very confusing because when the Beis Yosef uses it, because I think he really means the Baal HaTrumah, Sefer HaTrumah. They're two different svarim. The Sefer HaTrumos is generally not to be confused with the Sefer HaTruma, which deals with Isur B'Heter. Its author is Rabbi Baruch ben Rabbi Yitzchak HaKohen, one of the Baalei HaTosfos. The Baal HaTrumos is really Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yitzchak HaSardi, a Talmid Chaver of the Ramban, who was born about 50 years after the Sefer HaTruma. And so we're talking about 1190 in Sardinia versus 1140 in France. He's called HaSardi because he came from Sardinia. I noticed that Rav Tzair, in his Toldos HaPoskim, refers to him as HaSvardi, which I think is a mistake. I think it appears in a few places that other people made that mistake as well. They took HaSardi and they thought it was a misprint. They put in a pay and put HaSvardi. So I think that's incorrect. But in any case, we're talking about 50 years later, still roughly the same period. So by the way, if you go to Barcelona, you can still find the home of the Baal HaTrumos, I believe. It has a plaque that says Hekdesh Rabbi Shmuel HaSardi. He was apparently extremely wealthy and he left only one daughter and he donated his fortune to the community. Sefer HaTrumos is all about Inyanim of Dinei Mamonos. He was a wealthy man. Dinei Mamonos was his thing, both in accumulation and in libra. Here, though, the Baal HaTrumos has got to refer to the Sefer HaTruma. The Sefer HaTrumos deals exclusively with Dinei Mamonos. I'm pretty sure, but if anybody listens and wants to, a historian wants to correct me, please do. So the Sefer HaTruma, which is Inyanei Isur V'Heter and Yoredeya, but Sefer Torah, also maintained, like the Ravid, that it was Dafke the Kechal that required that we count the entire volume and not estimate what was Polet, what was Niflat, since Chazal gave it the status of Nevela, as it says at the end of the Sugya that we read. So why mention this? The Beis Yosef notes that the Rashba himself rejected this opinion, even though he cited it. For the Rambam and the Ran both maintain otherwise, and they far offset the Ravid for him. Isur that was cooked with Heter, even after we identified it and removed it from the pot, still requires shishim times its volume rather than shishim times what we estimate it was poli. The operative principle is simply this: lo yad inan. So why did I go all this trouble to tell you about the Ravid and the Sefer HaTrumos and all that? Why mention it indeed? A very important methodological, let me get to this and then we'll come back. Very important methodological reason. There's one possibility that the Rashba considered it an accessible Tzad Heter in weaker cases like Safek and Sveik Sveika. He wouldn't mention it if it weren't still in the ballpark. That's the way that reasoning goes. Right? So when a posek says the yesh omrim, he says it for a reason. The reasoning goes. He says it because if you have other reasons, it's a tzad heter that you can be mitzare to suffek or sveik sveika if to use. However, in the next siman, Sadi Tess, the Prima Gunim, among others, explicitly rejects this Ravid outright. But, interestingly, there's one posek who thinks the Ravid can be used with Suffolk to effect the Heter. And that's the Aruch HaShulchan. So, if he didn't exist, I'd have to invent him because I want to show the point as to why people mention Svara. So you could take it that way, that somebody says it's because they want to use it, right? In a weaker case. So normative halakha is otherwise. Now I'll step back if I need to. Okay, now. There's an extensive literature, for you listeners, on the heuristics for interpreting the language of Pesach. That's H-E-U-R-I-S-T-I-C-S, for those who tell me they listen to these with the Oxford English Dictionary. Okay. All right, it means rules of thumb, okay. Operative principles. Heuristics, it's not a Dutch rock group. Okay. One important sefer with which you should be familiar is the Yad Malachi. It's written in the 18th century in Livorno, which is a port on Italy's western coast, with which you may be more familiar by its English name, pronounced Leghorn, but written as Leghorn. You might have seen it in writing some places. Okay? This is very western edge of Tuscany, where I should note there are no places available for rental. If you don't get the reference, you're not culturally aware. If my friend Joel Rich is listening, he got it.
It's a Seinfeld reference, right?
Seinfeld, right. Okay. There's no places available for rental. Okay. This Sefer is one of the most important statements, I love the Sefer, of the methodology of the Gemara and its accompanying halachic literature. It's divided into three sections. The first on Klalei HaTalmud, the second on the Klalei HaPoskim that are listed in historical order, and then the third is on historical topics. Of the 36 Svarim that you should have in your library in addition to the standards, this is one of them. The Yad Malachi.
36 from the standard?
The Lamed Vav Tzadikim that you should get in your library. Okay. They include, of course, all of Rav Schechter's Avada. It's an important encyclopedia of halakhic topics. And how an author organizes the material is the heart of an encyclopedia's craft. As anyone, by the way, who's listened to Marana Rav Schechter Shlita understands very well. The first entry is Ein Mevatlin Iser Latkila. By the way, I'm talking about the Steich Hemet, right? So I gave you the first three pages of the Steich Hemet. Steich Hemet is another encyclopedia, sorry. I gave you the first three pages of the Steich Hemet, which in PDF format, which if Mr. Dubin will do me the favor, he will kindly put on YU Torah for those who are learning with us over the internet. So I gave you the first three pages of Ein Mevatlin Iser Latkila in the Steich Hemet. So you get a summary of his discussion of the principle that will consume us starting 3 weeks from today. Right? And that you can read and get a taste of his sefer. Remember, I like to get a taste of all the important svarim. So we'll take a look at that. The Steich Hemet, by the way, was written by Rabbi Chaim Chizkiyahu ben Rafal Asher Eliyahu Midini. It's a fascinating figure from the 19th century, worth your investigation. He was a diplomat, community leader, and a posek. And there's also, of course, the Pachad Yitzchak, which is not to be confused, of course, with the essays of Rav Huttner Zatzal by the same name. You can find the Pachad Yitzchak, which is an alphabetical list of klalim, and the Steich Hemet at HebrewBooks.org, and examine it yourself. That's, by the way, something that you should support, HebrewBooks.org. It's a tremendous repository and saving Svarim all the time, and it's worth your stack of dollars, anybody listening. Now, back to the Yesod that we learned from the Gemara in Gita Nosha. Whenever we have an entity, whether food or a kli, that absorbed Iser, we assume then that whatever was embedded in it was exuded completely into the Tarovas. The same din applies to a fork or a spoon. If it was dipped into a tafshil, then we assume its entire volume was niflat into that tafshil. There is, however, an additional aspect, which I mentioned before, which is cited in the name of Rabbeinu Peretz, one of the last of the Baalei Tosfos. This is the same Rabbeinu Peretz, by the way, who authored his own Tosfos on Baba Kama, which is very popular, and other receptors. Rabbeinu Peretz added that with metal kalim, heat is conducted throughout the entire kli. We therefore have the svara to consider cham mitzaso, if some of it gets hot, cham kulo, the whole thing gets hot. If we take this principle into consideration, then we have to measure shishim against even the part of the fork or spoon which never touched the food, namely the stem which one holds and uses for leverage to lift food out of the pot or to stir with the base of kibbul.
That creates a big kibbul, though, only if it's hot. I mean, the principle is only if it's cham, to be considered as kibbul. So if it's not cham, then there's nothing.
Right, so...
you just wipe it off.
Yeah, if it was something that doesn't conduct heat, then it would only be the part that went in and had contact.
Right.
Okay?
As well as just being limited to metal.
Right.
Like forbidden parents,
or wood.
Glass or wood, etc. Right.
Yeah. Okay? Now we see an important methodological lesson for ourselves. It's something that's critical for it, and you're going to be a little disappointed to discover this, but it's sometimes not so easy to paskin shalos from one place in Shulchan Aruch. In Basar B'Chalav, we encounter this discussion again of Rabbeinu Peretz and Siman Tzadi Dalet. In our Siman here, in Ta'aruvos, the Shulchan Aruch cites first Ladina, that is only the part of the ladle that enters the tafshil and not the part that never touches the heter that exudes into the pot. It might be that we consider all the Iser Balua in the ladle, but appears to be only the volume of the ladle that touches the heter. The Mechaber does cite the second opinion of Rabbeinu Peretz, Cham Mitzaso, Cham Kulo, but only as a Yesh Omrim, which we discover in the Sifrei HaKlali, means it's usually not his opinion. Right? Just Yesh Omri. In Siman Tzadi Dalet, however, he cites Rabbeinu Peretz, if there is no significant loss in operating more strictly. The lesson? Caution is warranted when you're looking in only one place. We get a fuller picture of the halacha from the Mechaber in Basar B'Chalav. And that's a good principle for us to remember. Specifically, that when we think we have an answer, look for the relevant references in Basar B'Chalav as well to see if he clarified the position with more detail. There's a further limitation to this din. The Tur in our Siman makes it clear that if we know exactly what was absorbed by the ladle, then we need not consider its full volume, but only what it absorbed. This would be the case with a new ladle, for instance, used for the first time to stir milk and then into a pot of flations. In this case, we know exactly how much milk might have been absorbed by the cup. But in fact, the limitation goes further. We really only need to consider how much was absorbed by the kaf during the last 24 hours, called, of course, in halacha, me'es la'es. Anything previous than that, we will learn, is no same tam lifkam, as the Shulchan Aruch will establish later, simanim and his mutter doesn't count. So, something that was cooked and absorbed 24 hours ago, that Iser Balua is no longer usser. It's no St. Tom, leave God. Let's summarize and see if we can put this all together in an organized fashion. We have the general principle of Dela Yadina and Kamen Nefak Mine, which we've decided does not apply only to Kechal and Kli Cheres, things that remain themselves Asurim, but to anything which absorbs Iser, right? With a metal Kli, we also have to contend with its ability to conduct heat, and therefore consider its entire volume as an absorbent. We limit this, however, to what was absorbed during the immediate 24-hour period preceding. With the new Kli, we limit this to whatever specifically absorbed if we know its volume. All this from a mini little sugya in Gita Nasha. Pretty good, huh? Okay, it's a lot of halacha. And this Tam V'Nishlam Shevach L'Kel Borei Olam completes our study of the first Siman of Tarubis. What should you do? You've got 2 weeks to review. Send me any questions that you have. Okay, I probably will share some more questions. Maybe I'll give a new set of questions, a one-pager, that you could answer in writing. You can answer them in writing together. You can open book, and then you have a set of notes for the first 9 chaburas, for the first siman of all the klalim. I may, in the interim, in the next 2 weeks, put up an audio file or send you a transcript of a tenth, but that will be on the new Siman. That'll be an Aim of Atlini Silachila and Choser Veneur, the 2 topics that we do next. Okay, we're not going to spend a lot of time on the bones on Samos as to whether or not they count. It's a simple thing or not. Okay? Alright? So that means that we will not see each other for the next 2 Sundays while I'm in Europe and Florida on my trips around the world spreading Torah and my own challenged personality.
Okay? But we possibly can see you on Wednesday.
What?
The Arsenal game on TV.
Yes, if you watch...
The room may not be able to see us.
Yes,
but
it is true that TV.